Charudas here, welcoming you to Bhagavad Gita as it is study sessions. Today's verse is the seventh verse in the sixth chapter. The sixth chapter is entitled Dhyana Yoga. I'll read the Sanskrit and the English translation, then comment. Jidatmana pashantasya paramatma samahita sitoshni sukha dukeshu tatamana pramayanaho. Translation: for one who has conquered the mind, the Super Soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, are all the same. We'll comment on this verse in just a moment. Just establish right from the very beginning here that the type of yoga which is discussed in this sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is not able to be practiced even by one in a million people today. What is being described here is a type of yoga, traditional yoga if you will, which was practiced in previous ages by people who were a heck of a lot more serious about spiritual life than we are today. Not only were they more serious about spiritual life, and of course that was their greatest asset, but they had other assets as well. They had greater intelligence, they had greater memory, they had much longer lifespan, their physical capacity was greater than ours. In every respect, they were superior to us. We reject the idea of the anthropologists that the further you go back in history, the more primitive and undeveloped people were. Just the opposite. We say that the further you go back in history, I'm talking about in terms of thousands and thousands of years. If you go back in history 50 or 100 or even 500 years, it's obvious that we have advanced in many ways. But if you go back in history 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 13, 15, 16, 20, 50,000 years, you will discover the existence of a civilization which was superior to our civilization, not only spiritually, but also materially. In the Ramayana, which was written about 2 million years ago, there are graphic descriptions of cannons which were used during the War of Sri Lanka. And after the War of Sri Lanka was won by Lord Ram, he rode home in a Pushpa Vimana. Pushpa Vimana means an airplane. So this is the information that we get from the great epics of Indian literature are that people were very, very civilized and cultured indeed in previous ages. So in this age, however, it is not possible to practice this type of yoga. However, in order that Bhagavad Gita be a complete compendium of yogic practice, Lord Krishna includes the description of Dhyana Yoga in his sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is going to go far beyond this, however. There are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita altogether. At the end of the sixth chapter, Lord Krishna already indicates that there is a better system of yoga than that which involves going to a secluded place, following rigid penances and austerities, being totally celibate, etc., etc. He indicates that in the 47th verse of the sixth chapter, wherein he says, Yoginam api sarveshan madgatenantaratmanaha. Shuddha bhajate yomam teme yukta tamam mataha. Yoginam api sarvesham means that of all yogis, madgatenan taratmanaha, he who meditates upon me as the super soul within the heart, shuddha yogate bhajate mam, and worships me with great faith, he is considered by me to be the highest. Mostly we have a conception of yogic meditation as voiding the mind. looking and meditating on a crack in the wall for 10 or 12 hours, etc., like the Zens do. Buddhism has certainly introduced that idea of voidism. Nirvana means the end of all material conceptualization, the end of all variety, the emergence of the soul into nothingness. However, that is not the real yogic system, which was described by Lord Krishna about 3,500 years before Lord Buddha appeared. The yogic system which Lord Krishna describes, which is the original yogic system, Lord Buddha's system was not really yoga. Just like a child is doing nonsense, and he's not mature enough to be engaged in constructive work. The ideal is not only to stop him doing his nonsense, but to engage him in something constructive, something specific and tangible. But you can't do that. So what is the second best alternative? You tell him to sit down in a corner, put his nose to the wall, and be quiet. Similarly, at the time Lord Buddha appeared, people were doing all kinds of nonsense activity, slaughter of innocent animals being foremost among them. Lord Buddha knew they were not at the stage of engaging in the devotional service of the personality of Godhead. He knew they would reject that concept, so he gave them what they could accept. He gave them a system of meditation, which is comparable to telling a child to sit down and do nothing. Ultimately, of course, as the goal is to engage the child in constructive work, similarly, the goal of yoga is not to meditate on the void or nothingness, but to meditate upon the super soul of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who exists within the heart. When one reaches the super soul, then he reaches an entirely different level of experience. He experiences life as a thrill at every moment. In material world, the knowledge that we gain it through dualities. People say, well, you can't really understand hot until you've experienced cold. It's very difficult to conceptualize black until you juxtapose it to white. It's difficult to understand father unless there's a son in relation to that father, and vice versa. It is difficult to understand what it means to be honored unless you're dishonored. In the material world, much of the experiential knowledge that we attain is through attaining knowledge of the opposite. And by learning what's on one end of the pole, you can understand what's on the other end of the pole. However, when one reaches the super soul, he transcends duality. He transcends the hot and cold of this material nature. And that is what this verse says. Sitoshna shuka dukeshu. Summer and winter, hot and cold, happiness and distress, they all become one to the soul who has awakened the self within. Normally, for those who have not awakened the soul, the pleasure potency of the soul, they are totally dependent upon what happens outside of them, how the senses of the material body interact to the stimuli and sense objects of this material world. This is what it means to be a conditioned soul. In other words, whether you're going to experience happiness today or whether you're going to experience sadness or to what degree you're going to experience a mixture of both depends upon the external world. It doesn't depend upon you. If it's a cold, miserable day, then most of your day will be overshadowed by the climate. If it's a nice, sunny day, you'll feel a certain buoyancy which arises out of it being a nice day. If there's a girl that you happen to meet and she's beautiful and likes you and all like that, then your whole day is made, as people say. On the other hand, 20 days later, when that same beautiful girl turns up her nose and walks away from you for another guy, then your day is ruined. This is what it means to be a conditioned soul. Because all we know when the soul is sleeping, all we know is the contact of the senses with the sense objects. And ultimately, these senses are going to diminish in potency. The pleasure which we can get for them will become less and less the older we get. And then finally, at the last stage of death, our senses will be permanently separated from the sense objects of this material world. We'll be cast into the womb of another mother. We'll develop another body, another set of senses. And with that set of senses, during babyhood, while we're crawling and goo-gooing and gaga-ing, if we're fortunate enough to get a human birth, then we have to again adjust these immature, developing senses to a whole new environment. And then we grow up, we get to be about 20 or 30 years old, we get a little bit of expertise in dealing with the environment, that lasts only until we're 40 or 50 years old. Then the process of debility, of alienation and separation, which culminates in death, starts all over again. Not a very pleasant picture of conditioned life. Much better to transcend these dualities and come to the level of the super soul. When one awakens the soul within his heart, and that soul becomes aware of his friend and well-wisher, who is also within the same body, and who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he experiences an unlimited transcendental pleasure which springs from spiritual senses. And no matter how old the senses of this material body get, those spiritual senses which are within the body are still fresh like those of a young youth. And they're also eternal. Our spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, didn't even come to America till he was 70 years old. And he left his mortal body at the age of 82 after 12 years of preaching in the West. And those who met him, of which I am one, never failed to be impressed by his youthfulness. Although his body was old, still his mind, his senses, his intellect was just as sharp and quick as a youth. Even though his body was old, when he went on a morning walk, which he did every day, it was his daily custom to go on a morning walk, he would walk at least 1 or 2 miles, and he would walk it at such a brisk pace that many of his young disciples, who were one half or even a third of his age, couldn't keep up. So if you want to know the secret of eternal youth, then become Krishna conscious. This body will not remain eternally youthful, but the soul within the body is eternally youthful by nature. And there's no need to identify the youthful soul with this ailing, decrepit material body. That is an unnecessary burden. It is a distraction from awakening the real self, which is full of pleasure. And as I mentioned, when that pleasure potency is excavated, when it is tapped, one becomes indifferent to the pains and pleasures of this external material body. His happiness is no longer conditioned by happiness and distress, hot and cold, up and down. It is outside of the relativities of this material world. And that is the point at which the mind becomes the friend. Because the mind and the super soul become one in harmony. The Lord is the master, and when the mind learns to accept dictation from the superior intelligence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then the mind is blissfully and harmoniously engaged in its natural propensity of devotional service to the Lord. However, that mind which is unattached to the Lord, it will be attached to sense gratification. We want adventure. We want excitement. That's our nature. There are 2 types of excitement we can opt for. There's the excitement of spiritual life. There's the excitement of directly serving underneath the dictation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, underneath the greatest master who can empower you to do the most incredible feats, both of physical prowess and both of knowledge. There's that type of excitement to which nothing can compare. Failing to cultivate attachment to the supersoul within the heart and to awaken our spiritual nature, we go for the other type of excitement, the excitement of finding a new woman, the excitement of having a new drug experience, the excitement of making money, the excitement of struggle, hard struggle for existence and survival of the fittest, the excitement of smashing another person down and ourselves taking his place as king of the mountain. As you can understand just from my description of these things, they're all perverted, sick, unnatural happinesses which are achieved only after great struggle and which cannot be maintained very long. Everyone in the material world is envious. No sooner do you get your position as king of the mountain, then you have 20 people trying to overthrow you and take your place. So this type of yoga, which we call bhakti yoga, yoga of devotional service, is so nice because the mind reconciles itself to its position of servitorship. It no longer maintains the illusion of being the master, and in this way it becomes happy. On the other hand, the yogic system, which is described in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it has the same, I shouldn't say on the other hand, because the goal is the same. The goal is to meditate upon the super soul. The method is different. The method is a very difficult method. Now, it doesn't mean it was difficult for people in previous ages, But if you try to accept this method to realize the super soul in this age, you'll fail for sure. You will surely fail. In order to meditate peacefully on the super soul, the prescription in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, again, which pertains to another age, and which Arjuna himself rejects. Now Arjuna is far more powerful and serious about spiritual life than we are, and if he rejects it, then we also should follow in his footsteps and reject it. Not the goal, again, but the method. The method is to go to a secluded place, lay kusha grass on the ground and cover it with a deer skin. The reason that you use deer skin is because there are certain properties about the deer skin which keep snakes away. And in the secluded place where you're going to be practicing Dhyana Yoga, there will be definitely a lot of snakes. There will be panthers, there will be lions, there will be all kinds of dangers. But you've got to go there, and you can't be afraid. If you're meditating and you hear a panther yell or an owl hoot near you, that cannot disturb your meditation. Your meditation cannot be in the least bit colored by any apprehension. If it is, then you're just wasting your time. If it is, you have to be completely free from fear. You have to be a lifelong celibate. If you break your vow of celibacy even once, you've considered to have failed and fallen. You have to sit with your back ramrod straight. And your eyes have to be not fully open, because when they're fully open, there are too many things happening in the jungle to distract you. On the other hand, when they're fully closed, you'll go to sleep. So they have to be half open, half closed. And you have to stare steadfastly at the tip of your nose. If you do this, maybe after decades and decades and decades, when your material body is wasted away, you will have awakened your spirit soul. If you don't do it strictly, however, you will have both wasted your material body and you will have an undeveloped spirit soul. And you're going to be a frustrated sort of a guy, an angry, frustrated, irascible guy. And there are many yogis who are like this, who are full of anger. There is one yogi, Durvasa Muni, who used to go around cursing everyone he met if they didn't meet up to his highest expectations. And also, like I say, if at any time during the practice of this yoga your mind strays, you lose control of your mind, then you lose everything. There is the example of Subari Muni. Subari Muni didn't only follow the prescriptions that I just described. He went further than that. He accepted an even stricter type of meditation. He got better and better and better at it. He ended up meditating underwater. He went into a stream underneath, over his head, and there, for dozens of years, he was meditating underwater. Now, can you imagine how much control of the mind it takes to meditate underwater? If I'm underwater for more than 30 seconds, my mind starts to freak out. It starts to tell me, hey, you got to get out of here. You can't get air. You're drowning. Help. There's panic that immediately sets in. Subari Muni maintained a yogic posture underwater for many, many years. Just see how great control he had of his mind. And yet in the end, although he was very expert in controlling the mind ultimately got the better of him. The mind, which is uncontrolled, is the worst enemy. And it cannot be defeated. It can be suppressed for a while, but ultimately he will defeat the yogic practitioner. The only way to control the mind successfully is to engage it in devotional service of the Lord. Simply to repress it is not possible. Subari Muni, after many, many years of meditating, trying to become detached from everything material underneath the water, he had become friends with the fish. And the fish used to come and copulate in the area where he was meditating. And after seeing the fish copulating, day after day, eventually his mind became infected. He got up out of the water and he went looking for a wife. And after that, he was considered to be a fallen yogi. Vishwamitra, same experience. Vishwamitra was so powerful. He was so powerful that he could create a universe out of his own yogic powers. At one point he said, why should people take birth from the womb? It's so painful. He said, better they take birth like fruits from a tree. And he did that. He created a planet where everyone who took birth there took birth upside down like a fruit from a tree. You just had to pluck them. He did that by his yogic powers. And yet, one day he was meditating with his eyes closed, and Indra, the king of heaven, sent Manake, a beautiful society girl from the heavenly planets. And there were breezes, nice aromatic spring breezes accompanying her. And she was wearing a very wispy sort of a nightdress, which kind of floated away, revealing her feminine assets. First, Vishwamitra heard the tinkling of ankle bells. And then he began to smell the aroma. And then his curiosity became uncontrollable and he opened his eyes. And when he saw this girl, she was so beautiful that even after performing yoga for hundreds of years, involuntarily he discharged semen. And then he was considered fallen after that. On the other hand, we have the case of Haridas Thakur, a young man who was chanting Hare Krishna, absorbed in the ecstasy of chanting Hare Krishna, and in a secluded place in a cave in the forest, he was approached by the most beautiful young prostitute in the area. She began to twist and cavort and to posture in front of him in the dead of night. She was a young woman, he was a young man. He could have done anything he wanted to her in private, in the middle of night. No one would have ever known about it. And you know what happened? He, not only did he not fall down with this woman, not only did he not become attracted to her, but after 3 days of trying to entice him, she gave it up. And she began to chant Hare Krishna, and she became a great devotee of the Lord. The conclusion is that if you want to do yoga, if you're serious about doing yoga in this day and age, the yoga for the age, which is for everybody, man, woman, and child, can perform it very easily, is to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
You've been listening to commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of India's Vedic wisdom and one of the great spiritual and philosophical classics of the world. The ultimate conclusion of the Gita is unconditional loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, bringing one to complete enlightenment and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode.